Hear more from Open House podcast site. Available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
The question of the guidance of God is the subject of endless theological musings, theories, conversations, speculations. All you might need to do is just pray. That's just what happened in the rich journey of my next two guests on Open House. Craig and Red Fulton were happily busy in work and in their pretty everyday church community when they started to experience an inexplicable restlessness. My guess is, if I told them then where they'd end up today, they'd probably have said, "What? That's so left of field." Well, that's very often what happens when you start to pray and let God do the guiding. With them, you end up in what I reckon must be one of the best ministry gigs going on, the Crocodile Islands. It's a great story. Craig and Red, welcome to Open House.
Thanks, Lee.
It's great to see you. This has been such a journey of twists and turns. It's probably worth starting with you, Craig, in the Royal Australian Air Force, where you worked as a navigator. Aviation has been, I'm sorry for the pun, on your radar for some time, I had to say.
Actually, it came as a bit of a shock to me. I finished university and did a science degree and majored in golf and a few other things, and as you do, and saw an ad on the television for a navigator in the Air Force and thought, that's something I would like to do. It's something that appealed to me. Within about 3 or 4 months, I was in the Air Force training to be a navigator.
And eventually on VIP aircraft flying prime ministers around?
Yes, I had a chance to fly Bob Hawke and Keating and a few of the governor generals at the time.
A great experience.
Yeah. It was a career move. It was. I enjoyed the career. If someone said you'd go to war, I would have been a bit shocked and probably hid under the bed. But I thought it was a good single man's career. My 14 years in the Air Force was as a single man.
What was it about flying that hooked you in?
Just being up in the air. Just the excitement of travel, the excitement of going to different places in the world, different places in Australia that I never would get to, I suppose, yeah.
Red, how did you meet this fine young aviator, navigator?
We met at the church that we were both going to. Yeah, we were friends for quite a number of years before romance blossomed. There's a little bit of an age difference between us, and that was kind of nice because we didn't consider each other romance potential. We were just friends, and it was lovely to be able to have a really firm friendship going where we knew each other well before anything else started distracting us. And at the time, Craig was in the RAF, but he was wanting to head to Bible College and had already started a little bit part-time studying there, and I was really wanting to head to Bible College too. So although we were a little bit separated by years of age, we were heading in the same direction.
So you marry, but this certain kind of restlessness starts to be generated.
We got married just after I'd left the Air Force and we're at Bible College in our first year. The restlessness had started while I was in the Air Force to do with my future career. I was being more involved in church and getting more involved in the Air Force, and something had to give. God laid on my heart, convicted me, if you like, to get out and do some Bible training.
How did you get that kind of guidance at that stage?
From memory, it was just a deeper and deeper conviction. I did get myself into trouble at one stage over in England. Hit fairly much rock bottom there and decided that I needed to take my Christian faith more seriously. And I believe God spoke to me and said, I want you to take it far more seriously, and I want you to actually do something about it. And at that point, I decided, all right, I'll put my toe in the water and do a bit of training at Bible College, which at that time was SMBC part-time. I later went to Moore College full-time.
Red, you were quite open to that.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'd become a Christian when I was about 14 years old. The woman at the time who just took the time to care for me and explain the gospel to me, I was so appreciative to her. I had a heap of questions, and she just patiently answered my questions and just kept showing me Jesus. And from that time on, I just knew that that's what I wanted to do for other people. I wanted to be able to talk to them about Jesus and the Bible and help them to grow in relationship with him.
So you move through college, you then find yourself in an everyday local church, and it seems like this is where you're going to be forever, okay? And this restlessness pops up again.
Yeah, it was interesting. We were in a beautiful parish of Menangle, which is southwest of Sydney, and it was just a lovely place to raise a family. The church environment was a really happy one for us there. And we really felt, because it's a semi-rural area, we felt like you don't want to just come and go in 2 years. Long-term ministry is really the thing, you know, and to invest in people's lives. So our plans were to be there long-term. And then one night, a friend of ours who was doing missionary work in Mongolia came to speak at our church, and we were really looking forward to that because we're interested in what he was doing. I certainly had no thoughts of cross-cultural ministry myself. I really think I thought that missionaries were stoic, unemotional sort of people, and I'm whatever the opposite is of that.
With a pith helmet.
And I just felt, you know, like I could never leave my family or anything like that.
Right in the middle of that talk, one particular story, God just spoke to me and said, you have to go. Not necessarily to Mongolia, but you have to go. And I thought to myself, there is no way Red will buy this. I'm safe because she will not. She will. God, you've got to talk to her. Don't talk to me. And at the end of that talk, I wasn't going to say anything, but Red came to me and said, "How can we stay?" And right then, I knew that we were going. I didn't know when. I didn't know where. But I knew that we were leaving our very comfortable existence in Menangle.
How could we stay and not go?
That's it. Yeah.
So you started to pray, Red.
Mm. We did. We talked to our church about feeling this sort of call towards mission. But at that stage, we had no direction as to where we would go and what we would do. So we began just praying that God would guide us. We figured that we should start to read a little bit more widely about what was going on in different places in the world. And you often hear Christians saying, oh, I've got a real heart for the Chinese people or something, you know, this sort of talk. And I think I thought, well, just as we read more widely, perhaps we'll wake up one day with a heart for the such and such people who we could go and work with. So we did a Perspectives in Mission course. We kept praying. And on one occasion, I felt like God said that we were to go to the tropics, which was very bad news for Craig because he hates humidity.
Better than sub-Saharan Africa, though.
It's all relative, isn't
yes.
it? Look, I am a bit nervous about that kind of thing because all sorts of thoughts can pop to your mind and it's difficult to ascertain, you know, where they come from. I just wrote it in my journal and I told Craig and we continued praying. And a number of months later, again, the word hill country kept coming to me when we prayed. So again, I felt unsure. I wrote it down and I said to Craig that I felt tropics and hill country was something significant, which I had no idea what it was. There was one particular day early in the morning, Craig was having a prayer meeting with a retired man from our church, and he was talking to Craig about the work of MAF, and we'd heard of them before.
Missionary Aviation Fellowship.
Yes, that's right. So he had had that discussion in the morning. That same day at lunchtime, a woman who we didn't know well came to our home with a whole lot of magazines and DVDs from Mission Aviation Fellowship.
Wow.
And I sort of read them. Craig didn't really look at them. We didn't think anything else of it. We're a bit slow, really, for people who are praying for guidance. But again, 3 hours later, that same day.
Same day.
A man came to our house, a normal Bible study group, and one of the men had a friend who was just in town for a few days. And we said to him, well, what do you do? And he said, I work for Mission Aviation Fellowship. And so we started to think, hang on a minute, that's an unusual
day. Actually, Red said, do you think God's calling us to MAF? And I said, why? And after she explained the whole day, I went, oh, you could be right.
It's a bit maybe he isn't. Obvious, isn't it?
And that's right. And Craig was saying, well, I haven't even got a pilot's license or anything. And the man who was with us had said that a lot of the pilots start working up in Arnhem Land. So I said, Craig, where's Arnhem Land? And he said, near Darwin somewhere. And we pulled out our atlas and looked up Arnhem Land. And in the key at the side of our map, it said Tropics Hill Country.
Wow.
And it just took our breaths. We just thought, God is speaking to us about something specific, you know. And so straight away the next day we got on the phone and rang MAF and began to think about how we might make the journey to join them.
It might be a brave thing to do.
Brave or there's another word that comes to mind.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was February 2009, and then by October 2010 we were in Arnhem Land.
Wow.
We did need a bit of courage, to be honest, to follow those directions from God. But as I explained to our children, we can either go the first time God calls us or we can be eaten by a whale. I much prefer to go the first time.
So now you find yourself, as I said before, on the Crocodile Islands. Mm. Explain where that is. Give us a word picture of the Crocodile Islands.
Yeah, the Crocodile Islands. It's if you think about the top of Australia, and there's on the right you've got the Cape York Peninsula, on the left you've got Western Australia, but in the middle you've got that square bit at the yes. top of Northern Territory. Arnhem Land is the right-hand section of that square bit up there on top right, and Gove itself is the very right-hand corner. Where we are is 200 kilometres to the west of that, to the left, on a little island just off the coast, about 10 kilometres wide by 5 kilometres.
Was there much of a culture shock?
A huge culture shock.
I bet.
Where we'd really been living was fairly monoculture, so we hadn't really experienced cultural diversity very much in our lives anyway. You know, certainly a lot of people said to me as we were leaving, a bit like what I said to before, oh, have you got a real heart for the Aboriginal people? And I was thinking, well, I've never really met an Aboriginal person. So,
And the makeup of the community is what up there?
It's 90% Aboriginal, or Yolngu yes. Is their name. And so it's 900, there's 1,000 people, 900 Yolngu, and we think almost 100 white people or Ballander.
My guess is you've grown a real heart for those people.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Mm. How's that happened?
Just in any situation, as you get to know people and your own prejudices begin to fall away and you see the person for who they are, definitely as you see the gospel impacting people. So, for example, when you see a community that has a sense of hopelessness in it, to be able to bring the hope of Christ there is amazing to see the impact that that can have. We've really grown a heart for seeing the people be able to have greater access to the Bible. So for a lot of them, their English literacy skills are quite low, which really makes the Bible a lot less accessible. You know, we've had the great privilege of being able to easily read our Bibles, and we love God's promises in there and the whole story of salvation that goes right through the scriptures. But that's very inaccessible if you can't read English well. And that's the case for a lot of the Yolngu people. So I guess we see our role a little bit up there to get alongside the Christians and the non-Christians to help bridge the gap between their faith in Jesus and their knowledge of the Bible.
It's probably a two-pronged task to exercise the love of God day to day, but also to tell them about the good news.
Mm. MAF has their overarching purpose is to share God's love through aviation and technology, and they're very good at demonstration of God's love. When you take the gospel out, it should demonstration and proclamation should go hand in hand. I think many Christians would agree, would not have a problem with that statement. And it's often good to evaluate yourself or your church or your organisation. Are we more strong or weak in one of those two areas? Are we better at proclamation than demonstration, or are we better at the other? We knew that MAF would be good at demonstration. We got up there and were pleasantly surprised, because proclamation is, the need for it is preached from the top. This year we've got a full-time mission development coordinator whose role is to marshal all the resources we have for proclamation. They put pilots on different communities to live amongst the people, to not just share God's love, but to share the word, to proclaim the word. And we are encouraged to go to other communities where MAF pilots don't live, to fly there and once again help them understand the love of God.
And you finally got your pilot's license?
I finally got my pilot's license, yes. Yes.
So, we jumped ahead a bit.
Yes.
So where do you fly? What do you do as a pilot for MAF?
Probably 4 days a week I fly up to 80 different communities in Arnhem Land, and take the Yolngu for reasons of health or education or funerals or shopping. Or there's a whole lot of reasons why they travel. We take white people or Ballander into communities to help out in these areas as well. A lot of different reasons, but because we're on an island, and I guess they need that as transport.
And you've been adopted into one of the families up there.
Well, when we were living in a different area to where we are now, we first were living in Yirrkala, and we got to know a number of different families while we were there, and it was decided amongst them that one particular lady, Mayalil, would adopt me as her sister. That's been an amazing blessing for us, because until you're adopted into one of their families, they're very unsure how to relate to you, because their social system is all based around who you are in the family. And so once they know who you are in the family, there's this amazing openness and friendliness that before then they're really very shy about knowing how to relate to you. It's amazing because it's not pretend. You know, I think I sort of thought, oh, this is like a pretend adoption, you know, but to them it's not pretend at all. We really do have this massive horde of very beautiful black-skinned nephews and nieces and cousins and grandmothers. That is so precious.
And adoption comes fairly quickly for MAF people because they are loved and respected in that community. So MAF was invited into Arnhem Land, and it's been there for a long time, and the people do trust us just because we're part of MAF.
Is there one story of one of the community members up there that you could relate to us to show how this actually works on the ground?
I was friends with Judith, a lovely young old lady who was a Christian woman, and her husband is not a Christian, and he had a long-term addiction to marijuana. And he came to us on the island and said that he needed help. He didn't want to continue the rest of his life being run by that addiction. He didn't want to lose all his money to it, and he wanted a better way forward for his family. And we said, would you like us to pray for you? And he was very open, said, I'd love you to. I think he was just looking for anything. You know, sometimes people have prayer as their last,
resort.
Yeah. So he agreed and very happily came, and we prayed with him, and we asked if he would like to do that in an ongoing way. And so they began to come each week for dinner, and we would read some of the Bible and pray. And it was lovely to see him come out of his shyness a little bit, and lovely to see him slowly but surely getting to know Jesus as we read through one of the Gospels. On one occasion, they weren't able to come, and he explained to us it was because he had a problem with his brother. We said, what had happened with your brother? And he said, well, he was very angry, so he came to kill me with a machete.
And he wouldn't have described himself as a Christian at this stage, would
he? No, that's right. And we were shocked just at the word machete.
Yes, yes.
And we said, oh, my goodness, what happened? And he explained that his wife was fairly sure that the brother wouldn't kill her, and so she jumped in between to stop any more violence. And we said to the man, Mark, what did you do, Mark, at that point? And he said, well, I didn't know what to do. I was frightened, and I just preached the good news to him. Oh, I would have loved to have actually been there to hear
yes,
what it was
yeah.
he'd said. But he said he just kept preaching the good news until his brother calmed down. We just marvelled at that being a fairly different family dinner to the ones we're used to. But
yes.
Then we just said, well, what happened next, Mark? He said, well, I knew that God would want me to make peace and to show love and forgiveness. So he said, I did the best thing I could. I shared all my marijuana with them.
That's the first time I've heard that happen. In the name of God.
That's right. It was so beautiful to see him thinking, how am I supposed to do God's thing in this family? Since that time, Mark has had the great joy of actually coming into God's kingdom. He asked for Jesus' forgiveness and said that he wanted to live the rest of his life for him. And so we're so excited now to just be able to walk alongside Mark, continue to helping the Bible be accessible to him. And he's now praying with his wife at home and reading the Bible with her. And what a transformed family that's going to lead to.
Mm. And our aim, I think, is not just to leave it there, but 2 Timothy 2:2 would say, you know, entrust this to reliable men who will teach others. And we want to see Mark now go and read the Bible with some of his friends.
Yes.
That's our aim.
Spread the word.
Yep, apart from other people up there who we're trying to mentor and support. If we see Mark reading the Bible with his friends, I think we'll go, that's fantastic. One Yolngu guy, one Torres Strait Islander, Gerard and Kevin, MAF have been partnering with and taking them around Arnhem Land to actually speak to their own people in their own language. They're far more qualified than we are to pass on the gospel, and so we help them to do the ministering, once again, the 2 Timothy 2:2 thing. And I think that's just another way that we proclaim the gospel as well as demonstrate God's love. MAF has a vision to see isolated people physically and spiritually transformed in the name of Jesus Christ. And we've seen both of that. We've seen evidence of all of that transformation, and we're glad to be part of it. We're privileged. It's a privilege to be part of all that.
When I hear your story, and it's a question I've often wondered about myself, do you think, in terms of guidance, God often uses the things that hit your buttons, the things that you're good at or you like, to work through those? That you don't necessarily have to take on something dangerous or difficult. It may be that you do. But with you guys, this seems to have been such a great fit.
It's a lovely combination for Craig, drawing on his experience in aviation and also his experience in parish ministry. And now really with MAF, those things are combined. I think the way that God works through us is often in two ways. Sometimes through our gifts and strengths, which is definitely the case with Craig and flying and being able to teach the Bible. But sometimes he also works through our weaknesses. And in those times of great weakness, when you have no gifts for the particular situation you're in, it's then that his power is strong in us. You know, I'm a bit of an extrovert and I love any kind of social activity. And for me, living on a remote outstation in the Crocodile Islands sometimes seems a little bit of a misfit. But I just know that God's working through my weaknesses, you know, for his glory, which gives me heart.
And knowing that we are where God wants us to be helps us day to day.
I'm sure that's true. I'm sure that's true. On the Crocodile Islands.
On the Crocodile Islands.
All praise to MAF as well. If you want to know more about MAF or support them in their great work, and it is great work, we'll post their website on our Open House Community Facebook page. Craig and Red, I'm so glad that you've come in to speak with us. It's been a great story. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lee. Anytime.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.